This episode of the Nerdy Legion podcast brought to you by... Have seasonal allergies got you down? I know Nerdy Legion listeners are proponents of carrying fancy hankies in their pockets. Let me assure you, constant nose blowing is enough to turn you off even the most resplendent meal. That's why there's Clarice Spray. When used as directed, you can be sniffle-free whilst dining with an old friend, for instance. A killer meal, to be certain. Use as directed for relief of nasal decongestion, sneezing, physical abductions, the constant bleating of farm animals, real or imagined, or mild acne. Visit us online at clariceespray.site. That's clariceespray.site. Clarice Spray. Because nothing ruins a meal like a runny nose.
Hello, Legionnaires. Welcome to the next installment of the Nerdy Legion podcast with your host, Craig Gunderson, and me, your lowly servant, Nick Wetmore.
Welcome. No, it's your show, Nick.
Shh, quiet. Welcome back, Craig. Thank you for joining me. It's very exciting to have you.
Thank you for thanking me.
Any big happenings this week on your calendar?
I was in another state. I work sent me to Phoenix for 2 days, and I successfully dodged any outdoor activities while the sun was out, which is,
I can only imagine how hot that is.
Oh my goodness!
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows we're from the Chicago area, right?
Yes.
I mean I did come back to 95 plus degree temperatures, but my goodness, you Arizonans.
Yeah, it's scalding. The only thing that's nice about Arizona, because my mom lives in Phoenix, the only thing nice about it right around now is they don't get the humidity.
Yeah, it was crazy how the sun goes down, and even though it's still, you know, mid-80s and stuff, Fahrenheit for the those of you in the metric system, It was really, really nice out.
Yeah, and you have to wake up at 6 a.m. in the morning because by 9 it is scalding out.
Every Lyft driver had a story about how much they get done before 8 a.m.
I'm sure. Don't doubt that at all.
So, yeah, first trip to Arizona, first trip to Phoenix. I made sure to have a list of possible breweries to visit for the dinner time hour when we were cut loose and on our own. So we did check out a beautiful place called Wren House, W-R-E-N, and ordered some local taco delivery. And the training in and of itself was a good time. And time well spent.
What did you read anything about the history of Wren House? Because the only Wren I'm familiar with is the architect Christopher Wren.
Oh no, the bird Wren, and they had the bird on the tapper handles and on the glassware. They seem to be really big on collaborations.
Nice.
So I've never seen this before. In house. Packaged goods that you could only drink there. So, like, it was in a can, but you can only have it on premise.
Oh, so you couldn't buy the can and walk out with it.
Yes, I've never seen somebody have that.
Wonder if that's a state law.
Oh, I don't know.
That's interesting. Did you ever see Wren up here?
Oh, goodness, no.
Okay, because that doesn't sound familiar to me. I might have to look into that. Do they have their own kitchen, or is it just food trucks?
Nope. Only beverages served, and that accounted for all of the dogs in attendance.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, that's another checkbox that when next time I visit my mom, that's a checkbox for Jana because she loves taking her dog to every place we go to.
Yes, highly recommended. And it was highly recommended to me. So we took one look at the menu online and we're like, we're there.
That's great. Well, where do you fall in regards to a brewery with a kitchen, brewery without? Does it really matter? Like for us, when my wife and I go, I like to have a kitchen because she is not a night owl. And usually that's when food trucks are coming around dinner time. And so for us, the whole experience, I mean, I love, it doesn't really matter. If they're doing great beer, I will go there no matter food trucks, no kitchen, doesn't even phase into the quest. But for a whole complete holistic brewery, I want to have a kick-ass kitchen that is serving at least elevated grub, if not a little bit better.
I kind of feel like the elevated grub tends to be a little too elevated. I'm not going to name any names, but if you've got a ramen burrito on your gastropub menu, you're thinking too hard.
Okay, please tell me you had this ramen burrito. And please, damn it, and please, okay, have you at least seen it? Is the, because how I'm picturing it is, it is a burrito innards covered with ramen on the outside and then deep fried.
Wow.
Is that it?
I don't know. I just assumed it was packed full of noodles and you take one bite into it and the contents spill into your lap, but you could be right. I don't deep fry.
Because that's how they do ramen burgers, is the ramen becomes the bun.
Oh. So you're thinking the tortilla shell is fryer hardened noodles?
Yes, and I hate to say it, I would be a little upset because that isn't a burrito.
No, it's not.
That's whatever they're called, chimichangas, whatever the hell they're called. What Deadpool likes.
Either way, not interested.
You should be trying that, darn it.
I'm actually a big fan of, we only serve beer. Maybe we've got a relationship with a delivery service, and you know, sometimes you see there's a little iPad mounted in the corner, and you can go order something there. But I will say, if you do not have a kitchen and you don't have that, definitely have a binder full of menus of places nearby that deliver.
Yeah,
and so when I went up to the bartender and I'm like, hey, we're going to open a tab. We're going to be here a little bit. We're hungry. What do you recommend? Who could deliver here? Who's nearby that we don't have to wait very long? And crickets. Like, no advice as far as that goes.
Wow, not even like McDonald's delivers.
The advice was use Postmates.
Jeez, that's not helpful. Yeah, and at that point, as a consumer, you shouldn't have to say, I'm from out of town.
But that is information that you would think would get you further, definitely.
But you said enough to let them know that you're completely bewildered and starving and you're dying to get something delivered. Do you have any suggestions of good places? Mm-hmm. Thinking that somebody that works in the area should know the area, and just to get that response back, that doesn't help the tipping situation at the end of the night. In my book, that doesn't help.
And, you know, if I'm there starting a tab and I just got off of work, I'm going to want to put some food in my belly so that your 10% beers don't knock me under the table, you know?
Yeah, I want a server to be like, oh, this food, even if it's a ramen place, oh, this ramen, it pairs so good with two of our beers. Let me suggest these two.
I mean,
like, guess what? You'll get that tip that I would be giving the delivery person on top of your regular tip.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you do that type of pairing that I don't even have to think about? Oh, my God. Yeah. That's service.
This is starting to sound like a very beer-focused episode, Nick.
I know. Legionnaires, just to give you a little insight, a little peek behind the curtain, Mr. Gundy was the person that introduced me to craft beer because I want to say it was right after Thanksgiving, he told me about a brewery called Brewery, surprisingly enough, with a U. They're out of California, and yes, you raved about an autumn maple beer that is a sweet potato beer,
yes,
with maple syrup?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I needed to hear. Needless to say, I had to try it, and that sent me right down the never-ending road to craft beer, never turning back, becoming almost a beer snob to the effect that I don't think I've had beer from the major labels in probably, 15 years?
Oh.
20 years?
See, I even like a Miller High Life in the summertime.
No, never. Never. I don't even care. I've been to plenty of events that I've even gotten free beer offers, and I will pass on them. But
there is something to be said for, if you don't have really good beer, then I would rather drink nothing at all.
Yes, yes. I can find a crafty beer that is equivalent to your major label beer. And if you don't have that, then... But see, I look at it like, if I'm not just drinking whatever is put in front of me, that's probably a good sign, because I enjoy the flavor and I enjoy that about craft beer, but also by me not just like, I'm going to drink whatever's in front of me. In my head, that's like, well, at least I'm not an alcoholic. Knock on wood, you know?
Right. Like when I go out with my parents to the local steakhouse, and the craftiest thing on draft is Blue Moon. I'll probably say no.
Ditto. Sorry, Ronnie Barron, but Blue Moon, I don't think so. I've already said if I'm putting a piece of fruit in a beer, something's wrong. Something's wrong with that beer. Nope. No, thank you.
Don't get me started.
But yeah, you turned me on to becoming Mr. Craft Beer, which I absolutely love. Living the low-carb lifestyle has made that really difficult. But, I mean, you even turned me on. My first beer fest, local beer fest, was thrown out by you, and I met you. There was a train station in the suburb that I met you at the beer fest. I think it was Oak Lawn, wasn't it?
Berwyn.
All right. Yeah. And that was just such a eye-opening. That is like going to your first comic book convention. All there are tents lined up. This one happened to be, they were lined up in a U shape, and you got a ticket that was it a wristband that let you have samples unlimited, or were there tickets involved? Because I know Oak Lawn, there were tickets involved.
So I've heard different things about this, and I think it's state by state. I believe you have to have tickets in the state of Illinois to regulate things.
Oh.
As to whether or not you are asked for a ticket or need to actually present a ticket in order to get your 3-ounce pour or whatever it is, whether it's enforced or not is another story.
Yeah, there's some weird prohibition laws from state to state.
I have to correct you, though. That was our second beer festival together.
The Berwyn one?
Yes. The first one we went to was, I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but it was... It was to benefit the Muscular Dystrophy Foundation.
Yes, that, what, you are correct. That one I totally zoned out on, but let's not forget that one. I also, it was in the city, so I slept at your place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even recall them being 3 ounce pours because I was very drunk.
And that one had the added benefit of having like food stations and stuff too, where they were doing like lots of samples.
Yeah, food stations and entertainment.
And a silent auction, where I spent a lot of money for some reason.
Well, the beer was flowing.
What the heck was that one called? I don't remember.
But it was for charity, which was...
It was.
It felt great. All three of those fests I would definitely go back to.
Hmm.
Yeah, they're, beer fests are just tons of fun, and I love trying... And how... Okay, percentage-wise, out of the three that we went to, percentage-wise... How many of those beers that they're sampling do you think they're actually going to put into production? Because it feels like a very low percent.
Well, wait, what was the third one?
Oak Lawn.
I didn't go with you to Oak Lawn. So it was...
You didn't?
No, it was Berwyn and whatever the one we can't think of the name of in the city.
Oh, Shazam.
I feel like the smaller ones... They're pretty much bringing their A-game beers, you know?
Mm.
I felt like Berwyn had some experimental stuff, where most of the tents were doing three or four different beers, so they probably had something popular and then had a couple of smaller production offerings, but yeah, it really depends on, like, if we're talking about... Chicago's Festival of Barrel-Aged Beers, FOBAB, that's all low production, even in a lot of cases, we only made this for the show.
Wow. That's crazy. But I love that they do that, or they will tweak an existing beer by adding a special element that they probably, you'll never see bottled or canned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so worth it. Listener, if you have a chance to go to a beer fest, highly recommend.
It's strange in the city now where they have festivals that are kind of location specific, and it's really just here's a lot of breweries, here's a place that a lot of people like to go, like Navy Pier or around Buckingham Fountain. Mm-hmm. And there isn't really any theme around it. It's just, if you like beer and you want to try a whole bunch of stuff over a short period of time, come do this thing. And maybe that's good for tourists or maybe folks out in the suburbs who don't make it in the city too often and don't know, you know, maybe they just want to be able to try, you know, six or seven city specific breweries or something. But like me living in the city, I don't tend to go to those sorts of events.
Yeah, it's more of a destination fest.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is okay. Yeah, I also like that a lot of the smaller breweries you'll find at neighborhood fests in tents. That seems like a very popular thing to do. Well, how did your love of craft beer, how did that start?
If you remember, I worked in hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in college. So I would come back home and work at a resort, and it was actually in the beverage department. They had a very specific just bar department. Mm. So I started there right after high school as a bar porter. And worked my way up to bartender and spent a summer out on the golf course slinging cans out on the golf carts and then managing that department and you know, people and managing the bar porters and all that sort of thing. So there was an event that had an international theme to it for one of the banquets. And I suspect it just didn't go over too well because they had a lot of leftover beer.
Oh.
And it was, it was a lot of stuff that, you know, you probably wouldn't go to the store and buy. The one that really jumped out at me as I tried it and I was kind of like, I didn't have high expectations, but I was really surprised at how much I liked it. It was Xingu, X-I-N-G-U. And I believe it was a black, it was like a dark lager, something like that.
Okay.
I'm Googling it.
Yeah, I mean, especially at that age when you're not making a mint of money to afford the extra elevated cost of craft beer, that's a tall order. Especially not ever sampling it before.
Right. And, you know, because they ordered it specially for this party, and because there were, you know, like maybe four bottles of this left, and they knew that there was no way they were going to be able to throw it onto like some other banquet package or something like that, and people jumping all over it, they figured it was going to be laying around for a little while. They were like, we don't care how much of that you drink. And you know, I was like, oh my goodness, this is really good. I didn't know what to expect, and I was just blown away. It's a Schwarzbier. But it is from Brazil. Yes.
Time to go to Brazil.
So I remember that as being sort of like an early milestone of just experimenting. Mm-hmm. I also remember back in the dorms, another Brian story. He was really big on Killian's Irish Red.
Sure.
Which, you know, not exactly exotic, but actually kind of hard to find now. You know, it was definitely outside of the yellow fizzy water that you'd expect to drink. And I remember trying that and being impressed that it was different enough that I was like, oh, you know, this is just different enough.
Yeah, something different than what you'd usually get at a cheap college bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think he drank it because he and it were Irish.
There you go. Fly the flag wherever you can.
I just found a postcard from him. I think it was for his honeymoon, and it had like an old man leaning up against the Guinness logo. And it says, I wanted to send you a postcard of me in 50 years.
My brother-in-law, who's off the boat from Ireland, that's all he drinks is Guinness. And he'll try stuff just because I like try to bait him into it. But when it comes down to it, he's always just like, oh, it's not as good. Oh, it's not, like, he's always comparing it to Guinness, and it just never lives up. Every once in a while, I can get him with, like, a wheat beer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it.
What about, like, Guinness Blonde?
Oh, anything that has the Guinness name.
They really? Did,
oh, God, yeah. Like, last year, Guinness put out, like, this sample case that had six different Guinness, a variety pack.
Like the foreign stout and the extra stout and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and then two that never came over there before, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he absolutely raved about them, was really upset when he couldn't order them past the holiday. And I'm just like, dude, it's a blonde. Like, I could give you a blonde that's 10 times better, but all it says is Guinness on it. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
Hey, he's pot committed. I'll give it to him there. Crazy. Oh, my
gosh. So I don't. So besides the brewery, Autumn Maple, which I'm thinking I haven't had in like a year. I mean, obviously it comes out in the fall and stuff, but I'm usually sitting on a couple of those.
I was going to say, in a month, you'll be able to get them again.
Yes.
They'll be hitting very soon.
And so top of my list still to this day. I'm sure the listeners know from your Twitter feed that I eventually inherited your cellar.
Yes, sadly. R.I.P.
I wanted to let you know, knowing that we were going to be recording, I wanted to make sure that I partook of something from the collection, not just because it came from you, but also because of its nerdy theme.
Do tell.
Because you gave me a 2013 Stone Farking Woot Stout. Oh, it's Stone Farking Wheaton Woot Stout? Something like that.
Yeah, it's Will Wheaton's collab.
From 2013, you've just been sitting on.
Oh, it's not like I didn't have more than one. I just happened to pass you along the last one.
It was very good.
Yes.
And I think it says that's only like 25% of it is barrel aged.
That sounds right.
It's like a blend.
Yeah. I think it's like, isn't it three people came together to make it?
That held up very well for 6 years. You did good.
Ah, cheers on that one. That sounds good. I could go for that right now. But good old Will Wheaton. That's fantastic. I like it.
So I think that's how I started to like expand my tastes and stuff. And it took me a really long time to realize, just like ingredients wise, that if I had an aversion to something as far as beer goes, like I definitely went out there and just tried to try everything that seemed different that you couldn't get everywhere else and stuff. And I remember trying things like Sierra Nevada and, mm-hmm. and just being like, okay, there's something here that is not doing it for me. And it took me a while to realize that thing is most really hoppy beers.
Yeah. There's certain strands of hops that I just do not connect up with whatsoever. I like Sierra Nevada, and I like Lagunitas. I like that grassy flavor that the hops brings. Mm-hmm. But then there's some brands that their strain of hops, and I've heard it from other people, and I've even read about it because I thought it was skunky, mm-hmm. but the way it's generally described is it's like a litter box damp cat smell. And I can never, like, every time I, even while I'm pouring it into the glass, if I smell it, it's just like, oh no, oh god.
I made a poor decision.
But the problem is I still can't figure out the hop, so I still buy a style or a brand that I can't wait to try this new beer, and I'm not a big hop head, but mm-hmm. every once in a while I like it, especially during the summer. Mm-hmm. But, man, if it's that musty, damp cat litter box thing, whew, oh, boy,
I'm
not fun.
I am terrible about cataloging which strain of hops I do enjoy and which I don't.
Mm-hmm. Same here. I wish there was a ingredients label that I wish the brewer would share a little bit more, but I get keeping stuff secret.
No, they do, like most really hoppy beers, they're bragging about what they went over the top on and stuff. And I wish I could look at the label and be like, oh, Mosaic, that's something I'm really into.
Oh man. But you took it to a completely different level though.
I did.
Considering, I mean, I love me some beer, don't get me wrong, but I mean, you took your passion for beer and really your passion for comic books and you being an illustrator, and I mean, to develop what, give, because I don't want to ruin the URL. What was the URL?
Well, it actually started as I started a website. And I couldn't get the domain name of beerlabelart.com because that was taken, and I think that site is still up. But so I got beerlabelsart.com, which is uh-huh. still, which is probably available right now because I don't have it, because I thought, you know what, if there's websites out there for like gig posters and you know, spotlighting artists that do, you know, book covers and things like that, or, you know, fantasy art, or, you know, those specific niches and stuff. I thought it'd be really, I'm the kind of person having the illustration background that I look at a book cover and I'm always testing my knowledge of, like, I've seen this before, I know this artist, or I know this style, and I just want to check myself and compare it to my mental catalog of, like, who did this? Mm-hmm. And I really found myself doing that with beer labels too. And like I said, there's like gig posters, with RIP, which no longer exists, was just an amazing resource of, like, you know, even something that was a little more underground, where a poster goes up in your town and, you know, it gets slapped on a wall and it's only there for as long as it takes for somebody to rip it down or whatever. And it just kind of disappears into the ether. But this beer labels and the art that goes on them is competition. It's vying for eyeballs on the store shelves, you know?
Yep.
But I did plenty of, oh my God, whoever does Clown Shoes beer labels, this illustrator is amazing. Or, you know, our local, Half Acre Brewing, phenomenal labels, and even the styles of those, you're thinking, you know, they must have like dozens of artists on staff, when it actually turns out to be just one guy.
Wow.
So I thought, people, I must not be the only person who's wondering who the artists are for this. So that was the approach that I took with beer labels art. And I started to do interviews with the artists, even though I knew nothing about interviewing people. And you know, I'm not a journalist by any stretch.
You just wanted to peel back the onion of mystery. That's all.
So I think that was about 2 years, maybe a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then, because I also wanted to keep an eye on, like, the business aspect of it and what was attracting people, and, you know,
you didn't want to just be backed into a niche corner.
No, and I also didn't want to just be blasting stuff out to nobody, you know. Just keeping an eye on what kind of visitors I was getting and stuff. I really noticed that it really wasn't doing too well, even if I was, you know, blasting out to social media and stuff like that. I consulted with a local SEO expert who has a background in, like, building really profitable websites and stuff. And he suggested, like, you know what, it's just too niche. You, even though you have a great idea and it's visual and it's attractive and people will come there and read that interview and maybe they'll be on their merry way, you really need to do more or broaden your focus a little bit more so that, you know, maybe Google will pay attention to it.
Were you in agreement with that assessment?
I think I definitely have no problem listening to an expert on the subject, but also sure. If you say to me, don't just write about artists, write more about other aspects of beer, I just looked at that as an opportunity to learn more about it, you know?
True, but also when positioned that way, didn't it feel like, dude, I already have a full-time job? Like, the commitment is like tenfold more.
Do I really need to tell you about the side hustle, Nick?
Go ahead, feel free.
200 plus episodes in and no sponsors, doing it for the love of doing it. Do I really need to tell you,
hey,
that having a little side hobby like that isn't worthwhile?
We have a sponsor this month. It's Grey Burger. I don't know if you listened to the episode yet.
www.greyburger.space. I'm definitely not getting rich on it, I'll tell you that. But it just provided
a better avenue and platform to get more eyeballs on it. When push comes to shove, what I was getting at was the expert actually knew how you should be approaching it next. It's just, are you willing and are you committed to put in more time and more
effort? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So having put this off way too long, the new website that we went with was thirstybastards.com. And I have a partner in my buddy Josh, friend of the show, Josh. Mm-hmm. And I as soon as I saw that URL was, that domain name was available, I was just like, oh my God, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. Because not only is it indicative or suggestive of like what kind of attitude you're going to get when, or personality you're going to get when you come to the website, but it's not, it's also not just even beer specific. Like I totally see us expanding out into, you know, like other spirits or even like, I actually really want to do some posts about kombucha because I recently brewed my first batch of that and I was really blown away by how easy that is and stuff. And you know, it went from, you can only talk about beer labels, you can't even talk about wine labels or whiskey labels or anything like that, to I can talk about anything that gets close enough to your mouth that has liquid in it.
Wow, that might be the tagline for the show.
But I wanted to circle back on what you were saying about...
Can I ask before you zip to the circle?
Before I go backwards?
Yes, if you don't mind. Now that you've hit this plateau... well, actually, I wouldn't even say plateau. It's going up.
Hit a plateau.
I know, it's going up. But have you circled back to any of these illustrators and had them do banners for Thirsty Bastards or t-shirts, posters, anything like that, now that you've established a relationship with these beer label illustrators?
I haven't. I have thought about things like what I always think about, what are things that could be sold on the website if you're not just relying on things like ads, or say, you know, Amazon affiliate sales for products that you recommend and things like that. I thought it would be kind of cool to do some kind of like print edition, gather up a bunch of artists that I've connected with over, you know, we're looking at a good 5 years now. And, you know, I don't even know what something like that looks like, but I know maybe it's a postcard set, or maybe it's a set of prints or something like that.
Or maybe beer coasters.
Coasters would be nice, although I don't know about you, but I have so many coasters.
I don't.
I have so many of my own coasters.
Of course.
If anybody wants to send in a self-addressed stamped envelope, you are welcome to at least a fistful of Thirsty Bastards coasters. actually, Collective Arts, they are in Canada, I believe. I'm sure you've seen them on the store shelves. They have, they do a quarterly call for entries for artists to contribute art for their labels. And I've got a stack as tall as I can stretch my hand of coasters by their artists and stuff. And yeah, I mean, they look amazing.
That's great. Yeah, that's really cool. But go ahead. Circle back, Gunderson.
You made some sort of statement about... Yeah, I don't remember what I was coming back to.
Oh, no big deal. No big deal. No, it's amazing you harnessing your passion and driving into a whole different area, but using your passion as that building block.
And learning a lot, too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I've started to do posts about getting started in homebrewing and just kind of answering some common questions about beer that most people are going to be Googling anyway, like, you know, how many beers are in a growler? Or I'm working on a post right now, just most people wonder how collaborations work. You know, who does what? And, you know, I see two breweries listed on this label, but I don't really know what that means. You know, who brought what to the table and that kind of thing.
That's something I would be interested in as well. As well as the Nomad Brewers, which that is a fascinating concept that somebody is, usually a Nomad Brewer is pretty damn skilled. That he could just say, hey, open up your doors, let me come in. We're going to do a collab for X amount of months, and isn't it like all of the finance is stuck with the person who owns the brick and mortar place? The Nomad just sort of swoops in, puts their name on it, and then they're out.
It's kind of like having a safari in somebody else's building.
Yeah, smart. Very smart.
Yeah. But
yeah, I love those articles. They're great.
There's one thing I did not want to do is beer news. Like if I'm putting my effort into something as my side hustle, as my hobby, I don't want it to be something that doesn't mean anything next week, you know?
Right.
A lot of people call that evergreen content. Like it's just as good as the day I wrote it. So there's lots of better websites out there for beer news. And, and you know, just what's new in the industry and what's going on today. And I don't feel like I have the energy to keep up with that stuff. B, I certainly can't compete. And D, I don't feel like that's what is really going to get people coming back to my site if I just want to talk about beer culture and interview artists, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. People have been doing it for so long. They have the market.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just seems exhausting to me.
I can imagine that, for sure. It's very inspiring, to say the least.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I like
that. No less so than 200 episodes of a podcast, buddy.
Hey, Pally, just to let you know, San Diego Comic Convention is happening right now, and 200 episodes under the belt still hasn't gotten me sent to a comic book convention for free. C2E2, yes, but not anything beyond that.
Well, maybe on the minute news is what you should be doing then.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Very true.
You could be talking about that new Kevin Smith Jay and Silent Bob trailer.
Yeah, you could do that. You're right. Yeah, that could happen.
You might just be doing it wrong. You should probably just go and declare a second business and write it off on your taxes.
Oh, that's way too much hassle. Come on.
Talk to the wife about that.
Stop the madness. Like, now listen, even though I'm unemployed, I'm going to fly out to San Diego and have all these expenses put onto our credit card, but then I get a tax write-off at the end
we'll
of the
get
year.
It back but eventually, but pay that bill right
we'll
now.
Get it back? Yeah, but yeah, let's front-load that right now.
How do you think these coasters get printed?
And I also need to print up some Nerdy Legion t-shirts. Thank you.
Ooh.
No, I'm not printing up anything.
I will say that because I'm a fiend for statistics and keeping an eye on like what's going on the site and what's popular, I can say with absolute confidence that the post that gets the most eyeballs, and I definitely thank Google for this, is I did an exhaustive experiment on what it takes to remove a beer label from a bottle intact so that you can actually save it if you loved it so much that you couldn't bear to throw it in the recycle bin.
That's some good DIY stuff right there.
It was a lot of fun, too. I did a little time lapse of if you needed to soak it and what solutions on each bottle and how long each one took for it to just float right off. And I think probably next steps on that is because cans are becoming so much more popular than bottles.
Oh, yes.
If there is a way to remove the artwork from a can, and there's a lot of different formats around that, whether it's like plastic wrapped or it's the same sort of like sticker on there. I've been experimenting with getting those off and trying to hang on to them in some way, and I think it's about due for an update.
Well, in that self-addressed stamped envelope for coasters, I'll make sure to peel off all the Rockstar energy drink labels and send those to you. This one has creatine in it. Come on! Let's get hyphy!
In lieu of sticking them to the roof of the interior of your car?
You mean the Scooby-Doo mystery wagon? Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not allowed in the car, but the mystery mobile, absolutely.
Mystery machine?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something that's uber simple, but yet no one has thought to document. All it takes is one good idea.
I do. I do have competition, Nick.
For undoing beer labels?
Not for undoing them, but just focusing on artists and branding and design and that sort of thing.
No, I'm saying the one article.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of information out there if you just want to get the label off, if you're reusing the bottle for homebrewing and things like that. Like, some people just want it off and fast.
Right.
But yeah, very specifically about getting it off so you can keep it. Yeah, there's not a lot of that.
Yeah, it's smart. Smart angle to take, Mr. Gundersen.
Why, thank you.
Yeah. So tell me about the Big Daddy Fest for beer. I know you went a couple of years, so I'm dying to hear about it.
You are referring to the Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. I might sound like I'm downplaying it, but it is very much the festival that we described, where, you know, maybe it's big and it's in your hometown, and maybe its reach is very local and maybe a couple of states outside of that, or, you know, maybe it's a lot of breweries that you see on the shelves at your grocery store and stuff, but they brought a couple of extra things that never get packaged, but just bigger, so much bigger. It's just the entire country's breweries assembled in one gigantic convention hall. And to give you an idea of how really large it is, my approach has been, okay, I am going to go to this year's show, and I am only going to drink Scottish ales. And then I proceed to sample 25, 30 of them.
Ooh.
Because you can do that at a show that big.
So it really is the Super Bowl of beer fests.
It is.
Because the way it's reported out, oh my God, the amount of international coverage it gets is crazy.
Well, sure. And, you know, there's awards in every category of every style of beer imaginable. And there's medals, and people, you know, breweries hang them on their walls, or, you know, and plaques and stuff. I mean, it's bragging rights, definitely.
Yeah, as well they should. That's a huge thing to win.
Definitely. But just, you know, as a craft beer nerd and stuff, it is Mecca. You won't be finding, you know, the rarest thing that you can imagine there, but
sure.
You're definitely going to find stuff that doesn't make it to your corner of the globe, you know?
I can only imagine.
So when we go, we usually, Josh and I usually we tag along with a friend of ours, Bob, who is a self-proclaimed beer tourist. And he helped us on another post that we put together about shipping beer, because his thing is he is sent to all sorts of different towns for work. He does a lot of travel for work, and he goes and he buys, you know, what he can find locally that doesn't make it here, or if he goes to a place that he knows is very reputable, he stocks up on stuff that is very difficult to find or to get here in the Chicago area, and he ships it back to himself. And so he helped us put together a post about the best practices for shipping beer, regardless of whether you're sending it back to yourself or you're sending it to somebody that you want to send beer to and that sort of thing.
Sure.
We actually put his methods to the test by throwing the box various distances and heights and made sure that that the contents stayed intact. We actually dropped it off of a garage roof.
Jeez.
Yes. And it did. It absolutely worked. So if that's something that interests you, we have a foolproof method. We named it after Bob. And we've even been out with him at GABF, and we've accompanied him to his stop at the local FedEx in order to send his box of beer home.
Wow.
But he's also got this method of like tracking new breweries and mapping out where he can go to hit a cluster of them that is brand new, and they spring up constantly in Denver. So a year can pass and you can easily go there and find 5+ new breweries to try that weren't there last year, you know?
Oh, that's interesting. So I know some people have created websites just tracking beer distribution throughout the states.
And oh, yeah.
It's scary how on point you have to be when collating that data, because, boy, do things change on a dime.
Mm-hmm. Fun fact, in that area, Founders just added Hawaii as their official 50th state. Of distribution, so they are in all 50 states.
Wow!
As of
very
like this week.
Very impressive.
So GABF almost becomes like the capper, the highlight of what is 4 or 5 days of touring around the Denver area.
But still, like, even you look at San Diego Comic Convention, they have off-site parties and like get-togethers and readings and bar takeovers, but that's just generated from, I'm sure, a bar who just wants to direct people like, hey, we want to get a big uptick, so let's do something that's themed around this comic convention. It seems popular, where it seems like this festival just takes over the entire city because there's so many people that want to sample all of these beers and they all can't go to that fest. Is that because that's how it's being, at least what I've read of it, it seems like the spillover is crazy.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of outside events, especially hosted by the locals.
Sure.
Expecting their favorite, industry friends coming in from out of town and that kind of thing. You're just not going to pack that much into, the 4 or 5 hours that you're actually at the convention, you know? I mean, you physically cannot and should not.
Yeah. Couldn't even imagine.
Be overdoing it and hitting everything that you can possibly want to hit, you know?
Yeah, I would say at any beer fest, you're not going to be sampling everything that's offered.
Right.
Or at least you shouldn't be doing that.
And we're probably long overdue for writing up like here's a do's and don'ts for attending a beer fest.
Ooh, can you give me a couple do's and don'ts off the top of the head?
I have definitely found that drinking just as much water as whatever it is I'm sampling, if not more water, while I'm at the fest is probably will do more damage control than any, any tip.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And, I feel like I'm seeing more and more, not just like you definitely see a lot of pitchers of water, and I feel like when you see that, the idea is like, oh, I need to rinse my glass because I'm shifting styles or something like that. And, I really want to make sure that the glass isn't hanging on to the characteristics of whatever I just had. Sure. that water is drinkable, and I'm seeing a lot of the bigger festivals where, there's like actual water coolers and that kind of thing too,
Yeah, it feels like craft beer bars.
Yes.
They have definitely, if they're serving you a beer, usually you get a water glass right behind them.
Or there's a water station or something.
Yeah, so that's pretty smart.
Yeah.
That'll
go a long way.
I bet. Some of this stuff is just so basic, but it's crazy when you think of how many people aren't Ubering or aren't ride sharing. Mm-hmm. It's a little frightening when you see that. Shoot, you even see it like with athletes today. It's like, how is an athlete getting pulled over for drunken behavior, when it's like, dude, you could have a car service. You could have a friend drive you. You could have your own driver, for God's sake. Nope, they're getting pulled over. It seems like that happens every beginning of every like football or baseball season. You always hear the stories.
I would never spend $100,000 on a vehicle, Nick.
Mm.
But if I did, I don't know what would dissuade me from driving it under all circumstances.
Yeah, but $100,000 vehicle from an athlete who's getting paid X a million, it's like, well, couldn't you have somebody that would, like, at that point, don't you think every team would be like, look, we have a car service. Just give them a call. Oh, it's crazy. But so I can't even imagine Joe Average at a beer fest thinking, like, I'm all right to drive home.
And, just kind of doing the math on what you're consuming can really help you out a lot, too. I mean, mm-hmm. Yes, they are 3-ounce pours, and yes, you're going to be tap dancing when you realize that, you just walked away from the Goose Island Bourbon County Stout line, and they actually poured your glass all the way up to the top, and it's probably more like 6 ounces. You're going to be like, you hit the jackpot. But, what bar would you go to and drink 4 6-ounce beers at, 15% ABV? Under normal circumstances, and right. Expect to be fine.
Right, yeah. But it does come on quick. That's the problem.
Yes.
That's why you're right. Doing the math and adding it up and just realizing, all right, this is the level. This is how much.
You got to eat beforehand. That's just a no-brainer.
Yeah, for sure.
You see, I don't know if you saw this at the festivals that you went to. You see a lot of pretzel necklaces.
Oh yeah,
and that will escalate. Sometimes you'll see, like jerky necklaces or beef stick necklaces.
Sure. Yeah, the eating is key.
Definitely.
Now, do you find that you want to consume everything and like expand your knowledge on every style of beer, or once you try good representations of every style, is it one of those, okay, I know what lane I want to be in, I like these five styles, and that's pretty much it.
I can't, you know, it's funny because I have this conversation with myself about comics, where I know I can just be hitting the stuff that I know and that I love, and coming back to the creators that even rereading stuff that maybe I don't even remember how much I enjoyed it, but I want to reread it. But staying in that safe zone of you know, the list of people that you know that you really enjoy.
Yeah, it's your comfort zone.
Comfort zone, but also just kind of, what's my time worth? I'm going to be 50 in 2 years. Like, why waste my time with something that I don't think I'm going to enjoy when I can have something that I know I'm going to enjoy, or there's a much better chance of it.
Sure.
And you know, it's just 3 ounces of beer, and yeah, you don't have to drink it. You can pour it right out into the bucket that's provided to you. I feel like that's kind of a pro tip too. It's just like, if you don't like it, find someone in your group that wants to taste it and does like it, and or just pour it out and don't drink it.
Yeah. Yeah. I found myself doing that a few times. Did you mute yourself?
No, I just couldn't think of anything to say. I did want to go back to touring around and hitting the breweries around Denver. You know, the show itself actually becomes kind of like the highlight, or, you know, like the final stop of what is like a beer vacation, you know?
Is Denver still a hotbed
of
craft breweries?
Absolutely.
Because I know I've read a few articles that, like, Michigan is really popping up with all of their projections of how many craft breweries are going to be hitting in the next, like, 5-10 years.
I don't know that. I mean, you can have dozens of breweries pop up. It doesn't mean they're going to be good, but
sure.
I haven't been really disappointed with anything that I've had in Denver. And you know, there's so many that it's, if you don't like it, you just go to the next one, you know.
True. Are you still a fan of the dark beers? Because I know that was our first connection together, was discovering all dark beer styles.
Yeah, and it's a tough time in the summer because most places don't, you know, almost every tap handle is an IPA. Especially a hazy or a New England right now. Everybody wants the more, like, the tropical juicy flavors and stuff right now, and nobody wants to serve there's a brewery by my office, Microphone, and for whatever reason, they will just do stouts all summer long, and it's just great.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, I used to have to store a lot more just to be able to make it through the year. But now it seems like you can get an IPA in December. You can find a brand new stout in July.
Yeah.
Just not as many of them.
You don't see a lot of them that will suggest that you cellar them. You know, usually that's the stouts and the barley wines and the porters, where you'll actually read on the label, they're like, hey, you know, this will reward you if you hang on to it for, you know, 2 years or 3 years or something like that. But like Dogfish Head 120 Minute, that they'll tell you on the label that it sellers nicely, and I've done that, and it's true.
Yeah, I think more breweries are coming around to, don't cellar our beer, drink it right now. Because, hey, I can't blame them. They're a business. They want you to buy the next six-pack, not just cellar a six-pack for 6 months to 2 years, and then all of a sudden crack it open. They want you back.
But, you know, I keep drawing comparisons to comics and stuff, but, like, you know, sometimes you got to buy one to bag and one to read.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, going back to beer label art, Mm-hmm. Have you discovered any comic illustrators have done any beer labels?
I have. I actually started to kind of make a little bit of a list, and it's definitely not exhaustive.
Yeah, I would think so.
And it's probably out of date, but actually
one of
the...
It feels like Hollywood has poached most comic book artists than beer labels.
I did an interview with Ben Bishop not too long ago, who is working on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh.
He is also the founder of Split Decision Comics, which I thought was a really cool idea. It's kind of a choose-your-own-adventure graphic novel.
Okay, that's interesting.
The book that he put out, it's called The Aggregate. He kickstarted it, and it has 4 beginnings, 7 endings, and, to quote him, 20-something choices in between.
Sheesh. Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
I don't have it in print. I have it in PDF, and you know, his art is really good. And then he
really
is
cool.
Doing work with Kevin Eastman right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So in terms of like recent, artists that, are like a crossover kind of thing, that's, that interview came out, back in the end of May. In Chicago, we had a now defunct brewery called Arcade.
Mm-hmm.
Arcade Brewing. Did you get anything from them when they were in production?
Did they do the collab with Valiant Comics?
Ooh, I don't know.
Did they do that collab? I can't recall. But I did like, I loved their beer label designs because they were all, what, like 8 or 16-bit video game inspired?
Yeah, they were definitely going for that kind of look on theirs. But they also did this really cool series called Six Pack Stories.
Oh yes, I did buy one of those collabs.
One of them by the late great Darwin Cook called mm-hmm. The Adventures of Dutch Courage, and each label was an installment of the story, so it continued over the course of the 6 bottles.
Yeah, they did that. With quite a few artists.
Yeah, I don't.
It was like one beer was one panel.
Oh, I think you're thinking of something else. Well, I mean, yeah, one bottle was part of the story. I don't.
Right.
You might, if it's just one panel, you might be thinking of something else.
Maybe. But I do remember the Darwin Cook. I don't know if I enjoyed the beer, but I enjoyed the art.
Yeah, that was like I think it was a dark IPA.
That sounds right.
And then Jill Thompson did a label for them. And Ryan Brown did a label for them. And Mike Norton.
Ah, good. Mike. Now, was there a pug involved in the Mike Norton label?
Maybe it was. He did do a Battle Pug Brown Ale, but I'm not sure if that was Arcade or not.
Of course he did.
I don't know if it actually made it out. Mike Norton and Tim Seeley did 10 Pin Creep.
Ooh.
That was another one of the 6-pack stories. I don't remember seeing that on the shelves, though, and I definitely didn't buy it.
Oh. Yeah, I thought that would keep going, but then Arcade Brewery did not keep going.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's still nobody in that space.
Yeah, that's a shame. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did remember the Dutch Courage. I definitely picked that up.
Yeah, there was also the Jason Aaron and Tony Moore Festus Rotgut, which was a zombie story on those 6 bottles.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yep.
That's but yeah, cool. I mean, I feel like there's a lot in between Like to your point with the Valiant stuff, I think the first time Martin came out and met you for C2E2, wasn't there a Man of War beer?
Mm-hmm. You are
and
right.
And I know there's an Archer and Armstrong APA.
Yeah, that was the first year they came out. There was a meet and greet at the brewery, and then they started selling the Archer and Armstrong collab.
So, you know, I don't know if these guys, you know, need the work, or probably not, you know, but there's something cool about having your artwork on a beer label, you know?
Dan, you certainly, when you're dealing with like Valiant Comics doing something with Pipeworks, that's a great niche to, at least you're with a very good brewer that knows their stuff.
Oh, I almost forgot. So we were at C2E2 when they announced that Brian Azzarello was going to do the collaboration with Three Floyds.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being comics with sort of like their characters and themes. But I never quite understood why they didn't like tie it in with the actual like beer sales in any way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like if you bought a six pack or something that there was a comic jammed in there or something, you know?
Makes sense.
I just thought that would be kind of cool. Like, you know, you buy the beer and you get a comic. That'd be sweet.
Yeah. Three Floyds label design is very heavy metal rock and roll. Yes. Yeah, well, so speaking of Three Floyds, they do Dark Lord Day, which is a beer release of Dark Lord. You've gone to it a few times. How crazy is that? Because I know it sells out. Is it hyper-focused on Dark Lord and being able to buy Dark Lord, or is it just it seems like it's a gathering of beer lovers. Some might have tickets, some are just showing up because it's an event.
Right. I kind of did like a, well, first of all, I did a post about this for Thirsty Bastards. And sort of like my summary ended up being like a Venn diagram, because it's not just, it's definitely for stout lovers.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely for people who like to like share beer, and that's the crazy thing in terms of beer festivals that's just unheard of. You're allowed to bring beer in.
Wow.
So people are sharing and tasting, but it's also a heavy metal festival
where
they line up the bands, and there's different stages, and so that's all going on too. But it's all centered around their release of their Russian Imperial Stout, Dark Lord. And it's they don't do retail sales on it. The only way to get this beer, aside from trading it with other beer buyers or, you know, other enthusiasts, is to attend the festival, buy the tickets in advance. Your four bottles of Dark Lord are included in your ticket price, so it's definitely not cheap.
Right.
And you're also given a random variant of the Dark Lord that might be barrel aged. It might be barrel aged with different adjuncts and stuff. It might be aged in different barrels besides the common, you know, bourbon barrel and that kind of thing.
That's really interesting. But can you get it on tap there?
Yes.
And that is on a schedule as well. But does it go beyond Dark Lord Day?
You know what? I've never gone down there to see if you can get a draft of Dark Lord any other time. I don't know.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they wouldn't publicize that.
Yeah, they're just far enough away in Munster, Indiana that I don't make it out there as often as I could, I suppose. But
sure. I didn't know about the music. That's interesting.
Yeah, and So, you know, you get a lot for your ticket price and stuff. And this year we went, and it was kind of the first year that we ran into people that we knew, and we were able to hang out with people who had brought a lot of stuff to share and stuff. And
Nice.
so even though you could kind of keep an eye on the schedule and find out what variant of Dark Lord was being tapped when and stuff, you were also being given free samples that people brought of their beers and stuff. And it was, you know, just as hard to find things from other parts of the country because people do travel for this event. And, you know, you still walked out of there with your five bombers of very thick, dark Russian Imperial stout.
And out of the variants that you've tried, are they all home runs or do they all just sort of bleed together?
Well, I haven't I've gone 3 years and I haven't actually opened any of the variants that that I've walked away with.
Wow. But you've sampled them while you're there, right?
We've tried, like this year we tried and there was a big storm that hit while we were down there, and so everybody kind of like while we were waiting in line, we had to disperse and stuff, and we ended up just kind of like shivering in the corner while people were passing around the bottles that they brought with them. But definitely, like at FOBAB, I've had what's really amazing is their variant called Chemtrail Mix, and it's cinnamon, peppercorns, and I'm drawing a blank on the other adjunct.
This is a Three Floyds version.
This is Dark Lord.
Okay.
I
Cinnamon.
see, I got it right here.
That sounds really nice. Those two flavors, at least.
Yeah, it's aged in rye barrels with cinnamon and pink peppercorns.
Yeah, that sounds really nice.
It's really nice.
But you almost don't want to cellar that. I would guess that the flavors in it, being an imperial stout, after a couple of years, wouldn't that mute the flavors or would that enhance the flavors? Because that's a strong ass beer.
It really de yeah, it's 15%.
Yeah.
It really depends on the flavors. Like I've heard that that coffee really doesn't last very long if you age it. So, you know, I'm probably sitting on bottles from 2012 of like coffee stouts and stuff that, you know, I should probably compare them to like their recently released versions to see how that kind of holds up, you know. But yeah, like coffee is something that I've always heard really you don't taste after too long.
I get that. I understand that.
But you'll definitely
Well,
get plenty of the barrel, and I don't know, I mean cinnamon and peppercorns, I don't see those really going anywhere.
would you recommend Dark Lord Day to somebody as would they have to be an uber beer lover for a recommendation, or is it just, oh, for the casual cut? You like stouts? Ah, yeah, grab a ticket and go.
You absolutely have to love stouts.
Okay.
It's like too grueling not to go there and be meh about stouts.
Do they oversell the capacity?
No, definitely not. I mean, it's one of those things where you buy the tickets online and you wait in a queue, and either you got it, like in 5 years, I've only been able to get tickets for three.
Wow.
And
Okay.
you know, I've tried all 5 of those years. And they're really well organized in terms of like when you pick up your bottles and things like that. They do it like you're boarding a plane where you're in groups.
Sure.
So you have a schedule of the absolute earliest time that you can go pick up your beer and stuff. And you're buying that group number when you buy your tickets and stuff.
Okay.
I think, you know, I'm not the biggest metal fan, so I feel like I could say if you just love beer, you'd probably be very happy coming away from the festival and not think that it was, you know, a waste of your time. I've never gone and just been like, oh, got my bottles, I'm out of here, you know.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
The food is really good, and they usually have food trucks and stuff from their own kitchen and that kind of thing.
Yeah, this is their Super Bowl.
Yes.
For sure. So I'm not surprised that they run it quite efficiently.
One really interesting thing is people will find out what the best of the variants is and what's the rarest of the variants that they put together. And they'll go to the festival prepared to like offer money for that variant. So you'll go in and you'll show your wristband, and you'll go and you'll pick up your pre-made bag with the random variant in it. And, you know, you'll get a few steps away, and of course you're going to pull out to find out what you got. And then this is all in their sort of warehouse. And, you know, they do a pretty good job of moving you along to keep the crowds from forming and stuff like that. But then you get out into the daylight and everybody wants to know what your variant is. And if it's something that they're really trying to get their hands on, they'll offer you money for it right there on the spot.
Yeah, Dark Lord, even without the variants, Dark Lord is still pretty much a white whale.
Mm-hmm.
For beer snobs, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, I've watched the bands, but, you know, metal isn't really my thing.
Sure.
It's good to get out and be out and rubbing elbows with a whole bunch of people who really like beer and stuff. It was really great to have people sharing with us and everything this year and making friends in that way.
Sounds like a very communal thing.
Yeah. And I think if you were just going like with like two people or something like that, you probably won't have as good of a time.
Like I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Can I, and we can jump off the topic if you want to, but one question that I'm dying to know about, what's your stance on white whales as well as people that are in the business, into beer as a business? Because we sort of hit last episode on the Lotte people flipping comic books on eBay. Well, there's quite the underbelly of people getting tracking down white whales and then flipping them in secondary markets and selling the hell out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your position on that? Because when I gave you my entire box of goodies, the one stipulation I put in was give it to somebody, but don't sell it. Because I know I can sell some of my stuff. And it's like, no, that is not the point. At least for me, it isn't.
I would say that just like comics, you should be eager to get your hands on something because you love it.
Uh-huh,
uh-huh. If you have the opportunity because you put the extra time in or the extra effort in to also have something that maybe you want to profit on, I certainly can't slight anybody for that. As long as you're taking care of that passion, you're doing it for the right reasons first and foremost, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I've definitely parlayed some of my cellar in order to trade for other things that have been really difficult for me to get. I've never actually sold a bottle of beer.
Uh-huh.
But I've also bought, you know, from secondary sellers too, in order to get something. Maybe I wanted to fill, like comics, maybe I had a slot that where I missed something and I wanted to fill that vertical, you know?
Yeah.
Back to your talking about the brewery, the other one that we kind of bonded over was their 12 Days of Christmas, which they are wrapping up very soon, which is literally a beer for the 12 Days of Christmas that is intended to be cellared so that after 12 years, each one is ready to be had by that 12th year. So the partridge in the pear tree is meant to be cellared for 12 years. And I don't, I still even, I've been collecting them since Two Turtle Doves, but, I'm still trying to figure out how I'm actually going to drink 12 of these bottles that particular Christmas. But, my wife, as a gift, decided to go ahead and pay top dollar for a bottle of Partridge in a Pear Tree because I didn't have it. And she knew, you know, my collection is nothing if I don't have all 12 bottles, you know. in some ways, that's the only way, you know, you can try some of these things. And it, you know, am I glad that someone was out there offering to sell it? Yeah, I am. How much would I have paid for it? Probably not as much as my wife did.
Yeah, I guess it comes down to supply and demand for sure. But it's not it's no one's fault that they're not doing, a brewery is not brewing a certain beer that people still want. You know, it's up to them to keep brewing it, and that will definitely cut down in the white whale department. Mm-hmm. But some beers, I mean, like Pliny the Elder or Pliny the Younger, that's only available in certain, I don't even know if it's available in certain states other than California.
Right.
But that's the white whale that I've always heard of.
Right.
And you can get
that in Denver. I know, okay. At the very least.
Okay. Well, it doesn't come to the Midwest, at least.
Right.
At least now it doesn't. And am I a big, like, double IPA person? No, but I've heard about that for so long that next time I'm in California, guess what I'll be trying? I'll be trying one just to say I tried it.
It holds the title as the highest rated beer on any website that measures that sort of thing. Mm. So why wouldn't you want to try it?
Right. Right. Yeah, I just don't want to spend tons of money to try it. It's not right up to, like, it's not Russian River Brewery. It's not up to them to get it to Chicago. It's right. More up to me to get to the West Coast.
Yeah, and that's an interesting aspect of it too. You know, it's not like with comic sales. Jim Lee's X-Men number one was only available in 20 of the 50 states when it went. Mm-hmm. Came out in 91, you know?
Right. But also, it's up to them to do a second or third printing, if need be.
Sure.
That's why you see all these... But you see all these small run, you know, comic book runs, and it's like, well, that, guess what? That's the supply and demand. If a comic book company just wants to print out, you know, 1,500 of a comic, that's up to them. They can do that.
Yeah, but it's just... My point being, there's weird rules that don't really have parity in other industries, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, did you have a, I think you had a Surly Darkness in your cellar, right, that you gave to me?
Yes, sir.
Like, I didn't have that one, and I probably had a gap in there even after it and stuff, just because I was like, well, you know, I'm going to drink this. But, you know, that's from Minnesota, and what ends up coming down here in the past has been hard to come by, you know, because it's in another state. Then, you know, something happens where they up production or they up what they send out away from Minnesota, and then, you know, everybody turns on it and stuff, and you hear people just like, well, it's not even that good, and I was able to get it, you know, 5 weeks after it was released at my local Jewel or whatever. And it's so ridiculous how the economy of these sorts of things hinges on its scarcity, and only hopefully on its quality, you know.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of it is people that, you know, they don't want to believe the hype. Right. Or the hype's been built up so much for so many years that it's going to be really hard to live up to that.
Yeah.
Which is I guess fine. You know, people do that with other mediums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, the internet makes us have different expectations about things, you know? Like, when something's digital, there's no limit on how many of those things can get around. Or we have a subscription to everything, so why can't we have whatever we want the minute that we press a button, you know?
Yeah, the instant gratification.
I guess that is what I'm talking about, isn't it? There is a term for that, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
But not just the gratification of it, but the acquisition of it. Yeah. How can anything be denied to me in this day and age? I should be able to have everything available to me because I said I want it.
Yeah. Yep. There's no, like, even white whales sort of, with the invention of eBay and all those type of services, you can pretty much find whatever, like, there is no white whale. If you want Nirvana's first small press 45, there's a seller out there that'll sell it to you. Like, you can find a way. So when that isn't offered to you, oh my God, are people up in arms.
Do you have, I've never talked to you about this, do you have, like, rare music?
I did back in the day, and then I sold it all.
You did?
Yeah.
Because you knew you could, it was available digitally and hanging on to it just didn't make any sense, or you just needed the money?
Needed the money. Yeah. Sad to say, but it happens.
Yeah.
But, oh my God, it has been quite a long beer journey for the both of us, for sure, and nor do I want to stop. Like I said, going to fests with you, that is always quite the memory, and everyone is so different, and they feel so new.
I know you've had a peek into my beer closet, so you know what a beer hoarder I am. And I can't even tell you how disruptive it was to all of a sudden inherit 70 bottles, you know, some of which were as old as like 6 years old and as near as I can tell, very well taken care of and stuff and properly stored. It was just like, you know, oh, this fills a hole in, exactly fits into a gap that I have in this vertical of Firestone Walker Anniversary Ales. Or, oh, I drank that because I was just kind of like, oh man, I've been sitting on this for so long. How much longer am I going to sit on? I don't need a special occasion. I'm just going to drink this. Yeah. And then now I got another one.
It's early Christmas for you. Maybe not your wife though, because getting 70 bottles given to you, I'm sure I'm not her number one favorite friend of yours.
She was pretty good about the 2 days that it took me to lay them all out on the dining room table and inventory them. It was the beer equivalent of bagging and boarding them.
Ugh, oh my God. But I'm sure you were a pig in shite, so.
Oh, you have no idea. But yeah, I wanted to make sure. I was like, oh, we're recording, I'm gonna hit that Woot Stout, and that was really good.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And not the first time I've had it, but definitely the first time I've had a 6 year old one.
Well, so, good,
thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do it. Like I said, sharing memories, especially related to beer. I'm definitely a person that equates memories to the things that I love, and that's beer, food, comics, and some movies. I can, especially music, I can definitely imagine, oh, the first time when I went to Europe, I was listening to XYZ, or, oh, I remember that meal. I had that meal on this vacation, or that beer on this vacation. I'm exactly
so glad you brought that up, because I was just... as you know, I moved into a new house late last year, and there's still some boxes laying around and stuff. And I had beer festival glasses that I had set aside. If you become a beer festival attendee on a regular basis, you bring the glass home, at least if you remember to, or you are careful about it, or you don't put it in a pocket that you that you then eventually fall onto. But so no end of a collection of tiny, you know, 4 or 5 ounce glasses with different festivals printed on them and stuff. And I just unpacked one of them from a box that was in my office. I'm like slowly making my way through some boxes in my office as I still try to get things set up and stuff. And it was one of my very first festivals. It was a real ale festival. I believe it says 2004.
Wow. Wow.
And not,
wow.
You know, not all of them have, you know, the years on them and stuff. So like, you know, I might have 5 or 6 from, or maybe more from FOBAB. But they don't always have the dates on the year on them and stuff. And so it was kind of like, okay, you know, this is definitely the oldest one that I have with a date on it and stuff. And it was just kind of, I actually put it on display, you know?
Nice. Yeah. You definitely build memories through stuff like that.
FOBAB is one of those ones too, that like, it just kept getting bigger and stuff. It's changed locations so many times, and even some of the original locations and stuff don't even exist anymore, you know?
Jeez. Do they over... Because I've heard from multiple people that they oversell that thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that thing, it's way too packed.
Yeah. Way too... Would both of them, because you know me with my claustrophobia, would both of them be not Nick-friendly?
Yeah, it's tough to recommend for someone with claustrophobia, because there's just something about, like, I know the one that we went to was an outdoor thing, and, you know, it was in the middle of the day and stuff, and, you know, there was plenty of elbow room at the Berwyn one, but, like, this is at a college campus in a convention hall, and there's just something about the way they lay it out, and the social nature of trying beers and stuff, and you step up to a table and you get your pour, and you don't walk too far away with it before you're back with your friends, and you just end up chit-chatting. So you're effectively blocking the people who want to actually get at the table and get their pour. Yes. So, I think you would definitely be triggered in that environment.
Yeah, because barrel-aged beers, that's my pocket, but I've heard from so many people that I should be avoiding that one.
And yet I go every year.
Well, yeah, hey, you're pot committed, and you don't have my hang-ups, so.
No.
Lucky you.
just different hang-ups.
Right. They manifest themselves differently. Well, Craig Gunderson... Yeah. I'm getting the wrap-up signal. From who?
I don't know who. This was our only topic the whole time.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know. I don't recall. I didn't even get around to my recipe.
Recipe? What's the recipe? We haven't signed off yet. Do you have time?
We will have to put a pin in my recipe for next episode, because that was on my bucket list if I'm filling in for Martin Umami.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then Matilda is in the corner, right, giving us the cut sign, giving us the wrap it up sign. I'm done stretching. Matilda, stop it. I'm done stretching. Craig Gunderson, thank you for joining me on the comfy couch, the banana hammock. yet again... It was a great trip down memory lane, as well as enlightening me on many, many things regarding a passion of my life, beers.
I always say it's the easiest thing to talk about what you do every day.
Heck yeah. Now, listeners, Craig Gunderson, a.k.a. Gundy, can be found at CraigGunderson.com. He also is on the Twitter machine, @Gunderstorm. Is his tag. You can also go to thirstybastards.com and check out his writing. Check out the site. Support the site, damn it.
Thank you.
Get in there. I am your humble servant, Nick Wetmore. You can find me on the Twitters. That's right. My actual name. That's right. I put it out on Front Street, at Nick Wetmore.
Not the real Nick Wetmore.
No. Or the Nick Wetmore. Guess what? Surprisingly enough, is Nick Wetmore ever taken? No, it isn't. That's right. I'm a fragile flower.
American original.
Exactly. Thank you. You can find us or write us an email. Have any questions, comments, concerns, complaints? Keep the complaints to yourself. You can write to us at hello@nerdylegion.com. We appreciate all your ears. And get over to thirstybastards.com. Put your eyeballs on it.
Hey,
tell
Nick.
Them Nick sent you.
Nick, thanks for having me back for another one. And thank you, listeners. I hope you're severely tolerant of me hanging out in the stead of Mr. Martin Ferretti.
We do miss him, but he is on his magical journey of wonderment and enlightenment.
I can't wait to hear the results on that.
I'm sure he'll be bringing it. He's going to be shot out of a cannon, that's for sure. But listeners, we will talk later. I miss you. I love you. Don't go anywhere. Just put us in your ear holes.